podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the It's All Cobblers to Me preview show. I'm Danny Brothers and this is our look ahead to Northampton Town's weekend game. It's been a rare midweek without a game for John Brady's team, so this weekend we come into Saturday knowing that we're essentially one win away from a points total that would guarantee League One survival. We think we're pretty much almost there. Same can't yet be said about our opponents on Saturday though, and here to tell us all about a difficult season for them, but one that kick-started again on Tuesday night. From Charlton Live is Louis Mendez. How are you doing, mate?
Hey, Danny. Yeah, not too bad, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good. I'm assuming you're a little bit happier after Tuesday, not a lot happier after Tuesday on last Saturday as well.
Yeah, that's the fillip you get from a first win in 17 league games, isn't it? So a lot of us have forgotten what it's like to win a game. So yeah, we're all delighted.
Nice. We'll come on to those results and the performances in a bit. Just to talk about the season as a total bit before, because we didn't really get to speak with you last time because it was a Tuesday night game, I think it turned out to be, because of the international break. Crazy old season, as usual for you. Like, three managers you've gone through already. Well, haven't gone through the third one, so hopefully for your case, you won't have to go through it. But at the start of the season, under Dean Holden, you finished, I think it was 10th last season, wasn't it?
Yeah.
High expectations for at least the playoff push, you'd say, at the start of the season?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we had a takeover that finally got ratified in the summer. You know, a lot of people obviously entered into the season with a little bit of nervousness considering who the takeover was. If anyone's watched Sunderland Till I Die and Charlie Mevin's story that relates to that, he's a big part in the ownership group in terms of the setup of it. He's not a massive owner in terms of it, but he's played a big part in getting the group together. And so people were a little bit nervous, but certainly at the start of the summer when the transfer window opened, you saw a lot of teams, a lot of like podcasts and that, tipping us to be one of those sides that would go up, because on paper our summer transfer window started really well. We signed Alfie May, who'd scored a hatful of goals at this level for Cheltenham. Saipan Kamara, who had done very well at this level with Plymouth a couple of years before. He's on loan from Ipswich, but obviously, you know, was an injury risk, and as we found out, has been an injury risk all season. So people sort of looked at the way the summer started and thought, yeah, Charlton are going to try and go places this year. But the rest of the window just felt slow, and by the time the season came round, it was clear we weren't really quite ready yet. Dean Holden started with a win against Leyton Orient, although I never really thought like we smashed them or anything like that. It was just a narrow little win against a side that had just been promoted and then went on a really dreadful run, where a lot of the problems we had last season defensively started rearing their heads immediately. So we went on to lose our next four league games. We also got knocked out of the League Cup by Newport County as well. Dean got the sack after just five league games, which was a little bit of a surprise in terms of the timing. He was the first manager anywhere to get sacked this season. But I was sort of the thinking that we were maybe only two or three weeks away from that question starting to be asked. So I think we were headed in that direction anyway. There was clearly something wasn't quite right. I sensed a little bit of needle between Dean and the board as well, particularly Andy Scott, who's the technical director in charge of the transfers, because I think it's fair to say they left him high and dry at the start of the season with a squad that he had to start the season with. Maybe it wasn't a massive surprise that it happened. Maybe just the timing that Dean went. So we got Michael Appleton in, who at the time, there wasn't any major celebrations from Charlton fans, put it that way. Quite a few people were underwhelmed. But Michael started okay, although that did coincide with Charlton getting back their strike force, basically. So other than Alfie May, that they were missing at the start of the season, Miles Leeburn, who scored 13 goals last season, and Chooks and EK, who is massively injury prone, unfortunately. But when he is fit enough, like if he was a fully fit player, he'd be playing in the Championship. Like he's an excellent player at our level. So Michael's start coincided with those two being quite fit, and we actually got a run of results together. I think Michael went 6 undefeated in the league. When he first came in, but he's one of his last wins was the 4-0 win against Reading, which was mid October. which up until last week was also our last clean sheet as well, actually, but which is remarkable. But yeah, so in that game, Chooks and EK scored, but also got injured. And it wasn't long after that that Miles Leeburn got injured again as well in a game against Exeter at the Valley. So once those two went, then we immediately, in fact, yeah, I think Exeter was before that, actually. So Miles got injured before that. But basically, once those two were out of the side, again, we're going to start suffering with the same problems. And that's sort of how it played out. So we had a couple of wobbles, a couple of defeats, and then we went through a phase of drawing a lot of games, and there was a lot of talk in the build-up to Christmas about, you know, let's just get to January within touching distance of the playoffs. Then we'll reinforce in January. But, I mean, as that lead up to January went through, I mean, December felt like a really poor month for us. It sort of culminated in a couple of defeats, late defeats at Leyton Orient and Bristol Rovers. We went through this really weird stage of conceding loads of late goals as well. Like, I think 8 goals after 80 minutes in 8 games, something along those lines, that cost us a load of points. Things started to get quite hairy for Michael Appleton. The transfer window came. We signed a couple of players at the start of the window, but you know, the likes of Freddie Ladapo, for example, felt like a massive coup. Someone like Connor Coventry's come in, but at the time when they signed it, none of the players that came in really hit the ground running. And the pressure was really ramping up on Michael at that point. And then you guys came along and finished him off, actually. So yes. We'd lost at Burton on the Saturday. And that was the day where questions after the game started to focus on, are you still going to be the Charlton manager, sort of thing. That's the first time I had to ask that. And I think, I don't like doing it, but it's got to that stage. Sometimes you sort of, as a fan or a journalist, you get a feeling for when it's time.
Yeah.
And that was that Burton game. There was a rumour the next day that he had been sacked, or the rumour was that night, to be fair, which I was chasing up. And then the next day it went round quite a lot of well-sourced fans who said it was sacked. He'd been sacked. Then the club denied it on the Sunday. Then the same rumour went around on the Monday. Then Michael Appleton did this press conference on a Monday, which was really quite sad, actually. Like, it was quite painful. Like, he should have been put out of his misery at that point. I think what would be apparent at that point was, we've got quite a big ownership structure, and I've mentioned a couple of names before who I'm sure you can guess how they sort of operate in terms of speaking to fans and that. I think about half the board decided he was sacked, half of them decided he wasn't. So we had this weird spell where he had to take that game against you guys. And I think part of the reason why you got the winner right at the end is because Michael knew he had to win that game. Yeah, so we probably had people up the pitch. I think we'd gone down to 10 at that point as well, and we had people up the pitch and got caught out defensively. So, yeah, Michael was sacked within half an hour of the final whistle, which was a bit of a relief for all of us waiting in the press room thinking we might have to interview him at that point, because it would have been quite nasty. It would have been sad, really. He was gone. And Nathan's come in. And after his first game, which was a bit concerning because it was away at Reading, he'd only been in for a few days and you're hoping for a reaction, and we just didn't get one. But since then, we've actually looked quite good, and it's culminated in us actually winning a game, which is a real turn up for the books, away at Derby last night, which was just a massive relief all round.
Yeah, it's a mad run of games without a win for a club of your size in League One, that you're probably constantly getting teams playing up against you, like raising their game just because it's Charlton and everything that comes around that. Going back a little bit to Appleton and his time in charge, you said he had a couple of injuries when the form started to dip a bit. So do you sort of put the... Because he didn't have the September transfer window. Nathan Jones then didn't really have the January transfer window to work with. So where are you as a fan base putting the blame for that run of form in the middle of this season? Is it to do with injuries? Is it just unlucky for Appleton? Or is it generally you would just blame Appleton for not being able to deal with the injury situation as it was?
I think there's big parts of it. For a few different people, really, the injuries will be a big issue there, because without those sort of quality of strikers to come off the bench, once we get to 70 minutes, we're pretty much done, and that's why I think that plays a part in us conceding a lot of the late goals that we did. Like I say, a lot of it comes down to recruitment. So, I mean, of the loan players we signed at the start of the season, off the top of my head, I think only Pan Kamara, who has just started coming back from injury for the first time, really, is still involved. Like, a lot of the business we did towards the end of the summer window, just wasn't good enough. And then all the talk in the build-up to the January window was we're going to be signing players that are fit and ready to make a difference, and that wasn't the case. So we've picked up like some of the players that have come in January, I'd say literally over the last couple of weeks, have started to show some signs. Although, again, how much is that down to Nathan Jones, and or how much is that down to the quality of recruitment? But in the last few weeks before Nathan came in, we have thought, well, that's been another really poor window. So Andy Scott, who is the technical director, who therefore is in charge, of course, of appointing managers as well, although other people will have their say in that. And effectively, the buck stops with him in terms of recruitment. I mean, he's become a bit of a target for a lot of supporters because they can't really see what he has achieved with us yet. You know, I mean, there'll be other things he'll talk about the fact he's got some higher earners off the wage bill, which is fine, but that doesn't get the fans out of the seats. You know, like just because they're, you know, obviously underperforming and we needed to get rid of them. You know, people are looking about the players that have come in, and there were some big disappointments there. Yeah, so I mean, Appleton didn't help himself, and it's one of those things, particularly that people found frustrating with him, is that, and it's always a debate as to whether it really matters. And while Michael was here, I said I was saying I really don't think it matters that much. We're making too much of this, but he's not massively like enthusiastic, or yeah, he's quite passive on the touchline in his interviews. And while he was there, I was thinking, like, that's fine. If he wants to be like that, that's fine, as long as he can get results, which obviously he also wasn't. But then since Nathan's come in, like, I don't know, I'm sure you've all remember the video of him when he was Luton boss celebrating away at Swansea, where he basically hopped into the away end.
Yeah.
He did like a light version of that last night at Derby. And I did think, oh, that was quite, like, I did quite enjoy that, to be honest. Like, that has got me on board. But he's also, whatever energy and expectation he's brought to the squad does play out on the pitch. That they just seem to be running harder at the moment, and you know, players who haven't looked like they were really had any confidence about them over the last few weeks have started to show a bit more as well. So a lot of what Nathan has done is the opposite of what Michael was doing, and so Michael has definitely got to take a large part of the blame for what went wrong as well.
Mm. And going back to the Cobblers game very quickly on that Tuesday night, you say he was pretty much a lamb to a slaughter, essentially, wasn't he, Appleton, at that point? It was like all of the stuff before the game. We thought he was going to be sacked before the game. We were keeping a close eye on it because we thought if he gets sacked before Tuesday night, we're buggered. But if he doesn't, then it's going to be a toxic atmosphere down at the Valley. And it was, you know, it was almost like you were waiting for the loss to happen, wasn't it? And just you were waiting for that last minute goal to happen, and then you could just move on with the rest of the season. For us, obviously, a huge moment in the season, but for you guys, just the end of that chapter. What did you make of the Cobblers in that game from a Charlton fan's point of view? I don't know if you were at the game or whether you saw.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah, I was there. Again, this is when we were at our very worst this season, so. Mm. But I remember that your first goal sort of came out of nowhere and it was a good through ball. Your winning goal, I remember, was like a really, like, obviously completely ran through the middle of us. But it was
breakaway,
quite a good
wasn't
game.
It? Yeah.
But yeah, I remember, like, I don't massively remember being blown away by Northampton, but there was plenty of sides who've had enough guile to beat us at the Valley this season, especially under Michael Appleton. So, yeah, it was a strange game from our point of view because a lot of the spotlight was on looking at Michael and how he reacted to certain things. Because it felt very, you won't know this, but when we sat Nigel Adkins, his last game was a 3-2 home defeat against Accrington.
Right.
And that game was very similar to the Northampton game in that we scored twice in it. And actually we're like, how have we scored twice in this? We don't even look like we're very good. But I remember getting back, I think we were level right on a stroke of half time in that game, if I remember
yeah,
right.
So, yeah.
You're being a bit surprised about it, but then I think second half we had a bit of a go and I thought we might have nicked it near the end when Alfie May had a shot that the keeper saved well. But like I said, we've always had this vulnerability and Northampton, like many sides, were able to pick us off.
Yeah, so it's pretty much, yeah, half an hour after the game, you didn't even do the press conference, it's gone. When did you first start hearing the name Nathan Jones? I would have imagined it got you fairly excited when you first heard the name.
It came out that night.
Oh, did it? Okay.
And my initial reaction was no chance. Like, so Nathan has been with us before. He was on our coaching staff with the academy for one season, maybe 11 years ago. He won the whatever trophy that they were playing for, that division they were in at that stage. But yeah, so my initial reaction was no chance, especially because like our managerial appointments recently hadn't necessarily been of that ilk anyway, as in like the sort of money you'd have to spend to get that sort of manager. So yeah, I didn't think it was going to happen. Then more and more noise started coming. And you get excited. Like, you have to take into account what's gone wrong elsewhere. You know, with Southampton and with Stoke, but also at the same time, you look at the bigger pictures of those clubs, and particularly Southampton last season, where it seemed to be a right mess. But Stoke have been another club where quite a lot of managers, like decent managers, have gone in and not really been able to get a tune out of that. And being Charlton fans, we know that it's not always just the manager. There's often bigger sort of wheels in motion in terms of what's going wrong behind the scenes. With ownerships, with structures behind the club, with cultures within the club. And these are things that have taken out many managers with Charlton over the years as well. So you can accept that someone might go into a club, do a bad job, but it doesn't necessarily all fall down on their shoulders, because there could be other issues there. And so that's what I was sort of hoping for with Nathan. And obviously you've got to cling on to what he's done at Luton. And the success he's had there. And like I say, from when he was here before, there's a couple of people I know who were at the club at the time who spoke so highly of him, like higher than you'd often, like, so you often hear people come through the buildings, oh, I knew him, but he got spoken of so highly. A couple of former players did a bit with one of the former staff members on Twitter Spaces after, like, when he was being linked, and they spoke really highly of him as well. So I thought, okay, yeah, there's something here, and yeah, he's galvanized us in these early stages, with not only with the performances, but obviously now with the results, especially the last three of all against the top three, and we got 5 points off of them, which under Appleton we would have somehow got minus points out of those games.
Yeah, so it's a defeat at Reading, then three draws, but like I say, against good opposition. And then at Derby Tuesday night, the pinnacle of what he's done so far, a goal down at half-time to then change it up and come from behind to win at Pride Park. No matter where you are in the league, if you were top of the league, that's a great result. So to go and do that in the position that you're in the troubles that you've had, is a superb result. That was very... I think that would have got you within one game of a record, wouldn't it? Of a club record for runs of games without a win. So that would have been, this Saturday would have been equaling it if you didn't win.
I hadn't actually looked up that stat, funnily enough. Yeah, it sounds about right.
I just saw it and I thought, oh, you know, it's guaranteed to be, you know, you need to beat us to avoid that. And it just happens. It's just the way football happens. But it's obviously changed a lot. It's changed the mentality of the players. You could see from the highlights for the last couple of games at Portsmouth, there's one incredible tackle from, is it Gillespie?
Gillespie, yeah.
Against Portsmouth, which is insane. But just that mentality to defend in numbers, to fight for everything, typical what you'd expect from Nathan Jones just by looking at him and hearing him speak. You know almost what a type of team is going to be by hearing that. But how big was that? Just to get the win, firstly, how to get that monkey off the back, how big was that on Tuesday night for you?
It's absolutely massive, because, I mean, I before the game on Tuesday, I was thinking, right, you know, let's just say we're not expected to win this. That's fine. That's the same with the other two games that we got good points from. That's fine. But particularly with our away form, that was quite concerning, because I think, right, because then our next two games were away from home as well. So after you guys were going to Cheltenham as well, I'm thinking, like, if we were to go these three games without a win, and if we hadn't won at Derby, and therefore there's a lot of pressure on Saturday and a lot of pressure on Tuesday against Cheltenham, I mean, that is a very long time to go without a win. And also, it would give particularly Cheltenham a chance to try and catch up with us, but the sides below a chance to catch up with us. So the run that was ahead of us was nerve-wracking. But the fact that it was unexpected, the fact it came after, actually, as well, a poor first half. So this sort of sums up the difference between Nathan and possibly, you know, myself, in that at half time we were 1-0 down in an absolutely nothing game where they just scored from a corner shortly before half time. And I was thinking, you know, if that corner hadn't happened, it was a bit of a flat display, but I would have been more than happy with that at half time. But in his interview after the game, he was asked, how frustrating was it to go in a goal down, having held Derby at arm's length? Like, they weren't creating a great deal of chances. But he was like, I don't want to come here and hold them at arm's length. I want to come here and blow them away. Like,
yeah,
just completely different mentality. And that's what he seems to have brought into the side. The celebrations at full time yesterday, it just brought everyone together. There were times earlier on, particularly under Michael in December and early January, where this squad was pretty hated by the fans. There was no connection whatsoever. But Nathan's flipped that, as well as the points that obviously we've gained and garnered that little bit of extra space above the relegation zone, it's just brought in so much belief back into the side. And that has been building. So like you say, the Reading game was poor. Like, I just can't get away from that. Even the Lincoln game, which Nathan speaks up in the first half of that game, a lot of us were sort of sharing concerned glances at half-time because we'd been poor, but we came out second half and looked better. Bolton game, I thought we were very good, but obviously the disappointing thing was that we conceded 3 goals, and that has still been a problem. But then Portsmouth, a clean sheet, the first one in 22 games, and then to go to Derby and not give away many chances and to win the way we did. Yeah, it's like a complete sea change in terms of the feeling around the place. And now everyone's thinking, right, a couple more, we'll be fine. We won't get dragged back into this now.
Yeah, it just sends you, when you win on a Tuesday night like that after such a long run, it sends you into the weekend excited, hopeful. Everything just switches in the fan set mind, doesn't it, in the mindset. Whereas it could have been another nervous one, like you said. It could have been another nervous couple of days in the lead up, and the fans going into the game will be sort of slightly more apprehensive about stuff. But that just gives all the fans coming on Saturday, that I'm assuming it's a sellout because I think I've seen that it's all sold out. Yeah. It just gives them that umph and, that us against the world mentality, and suddenly the atmosphere changes, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And Nathan knows that as well. Not just obviously with the performance he's got from his side, but as I mentioned earlier, the way he interacted with the crowd at full time helped a lot because it got everyone on side. And people were excited to have Nathan here anyway because of that sort of thing. But yeah, the mentality around the place is just completely changed. It's remarkable how one win can do it. But even like I say, even the last couple of draws against Bolton and Portsmouth, the way we were speaking on our podcast on Sunday morning, I sort of had to point out at one point, it's mad, isn't it? We're talking like this when we haven't won for 16 games. Like, people were really starting to feel like we'd turned the corner, and last night just reinforced that, I think, for us. And then now everything's right with the world because you're only as good as your last game.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a quick break now. Let's listen to some ads. We'll be back with more afterwards to drill into the game a little bit more on Saturday. Welcome back. We're still here with Louis from Charlton Live. Louis, we've spoken a little bit about what Nathan Jones brings off the pitch, the character, the enthusiasm, the connection between the fans and the side again. What's he changed tactically compared to what we saw from Appleton?
So we're still playing the same formation. So we've still gone with 3 at the back. There's been a fair bit of chopping and changing in terms of who's been starting in various positions. So it's quite eye-opening that he's dropped, or I think rotated is probably the fair way of putting it, because they've come in and come out, but he's rotated both the top scorer in Alfie May and the captain in George Dobson over the last few weeks. So last night, Dobbo was, I think, on the bench and Connor Coventry started, and Connor's one of the ones that we expected a lot from and actually been quite disappointed with after signing from West Ham in the window. But he played really well in the second half last night. But yeah, up top as well, he's sort of flitted between Freddie Ladapo and Alfie May, starting alongside Dan Carnu, who is, I think he might be 20 now, but he might still be 19. I should know this because we spoke to him the other day and had to look it up. Who's just been an absolute revelation under Nathan. He's been good this season anyway, since coming back from his loan at Southend, but he's just looked a completely different animal over the last few weeks. So it's more in terms of personnel that he switched, but also I think we look like we're pushing up higher, pressing higher and all that sort of stuff. We definitely play with more energy. There was one like real litmus test for me, which was like someone who's literally played about 5 minutes under Nathan, but we've got a youngster called Tyrese Campbell, who I've really liked over the course of his time, but under Michael's sort of last couple of months, he's looked absolutely bereft of confidence and shirking and no effort, and that sort of just didn't want to be there. But he came off the bench for 5 minutes against Portsmouth on Saturday, and he was running around like a madman. He thought, right, there's something's different here, because he wasn't doing that recently. And that just sort of sums up how Nathan's re-energized the squad. And you know, people have told me, we had a text on the training ground on day one saying that he is serious, this guy. He is intense. I remember thinking, good, someone's got to knock this lot into shape, because they need that. And it's worked wonders so far. The other thing, so I mentioned Dan, he's put a little bit of trust in youth. So along with Dan, there's also a young midfielder called Caroy Anderson, who scored the winner against Derby, who started at the beginning of the season under Holden, because we didn't do our transfer business early enough. And he looked okay, but not quite there yet. But Nathan's seen something in him, and maybe I think the energy that he brings, and he's just brought him back into the side, and he's looked like a revelation in that midfield. So more energy in the midfield, more energy pushing up, rotating players when needed. And like I say, he does have the secret weapon of being able to bring on Chooks and EK for 20 minutes every game. Yeah. And if it's 0-0, 1-0, 2-1 or something Saturday, and Chooks is coming on, you got to be wary, because he will cause you a lot of problems.
Yeah, I mean, you always, from the game we had against each other in January, you struck me as a team that if you sorted that defensive base out, if that got sorted out, you've got more than enough for any relegation bottom half battle, compared to some of the teams we've seen. With your pace, the power going forward, it seems like he's got that defensive stuff sorted out already, which is amazing for the first few weeks. That was his kind of first job, wasn't it, to get the defense sorted out and then build from that, especially with the situation you're in.
I should have mentioned that as well, really. Yeah, like the organize, so our defense last season and this season has just been amongst the worst. Like they were, for long spells of up until the last couple of weeks, we were the worst or second worst defense overall in terms of goals conceded. But it's one thing I'd love to sit down and ask a manager, if we ever had a chance to do like a long form interview rather than a post match with him, I'd love to sit down and say, like, what do you actually do to organise them on the training ground? Because it's remarkable how different it has been. Like we have been so easy to play through this season, for various reasons. I mean, he's changed the wing backs, which I think has helped recently. So we've signed a couple in January, one of which has immediately got injured, frustratingly. Kane Ramsey, who was signed from Harrogate, who'd look good. But Thierry Small, who he was a Southampton youth player. They released him so we could sign him. I think it was one of those jobbies. But he's come in as a bit of an unknown quantity and looked very good, and shored us up down the left-hand side a little bit where we'd had looked open. Tanai Watson on the right-hand side, who's now come back in because of the injury to Ramsey, has actually looked a bit sharper as well, considering he'd been one of the biggest frustrations for me this season. So he has somehow knocked them into some sort of structure at the back, and I'd love to know how you do that quickly, because some of these, no matter who we put out, and we did chop and change a lot at the back, some of it had just been all over the place this season. So we conceded a lot of goals from silly individual errors, which are always frustrating. But I often find more frustrating the goals where you feel like you've been played through too easily, because that's a team going wrong rather than someone having a bit of a head loss. And it just happened to us way too often. How he's changed it, I don't know. But Portsmouth didn't look much like scoring. They had three or four chances early on, and then we shut up shop. Derby didn't have many chances last night. Bolton, this is going to sound ridiculous, scored three, but I reckon they had maybe five chances altogether. So even then, I felt, despite the fact we conceded a lot of goals, I did come away in hindsight thinking, I wonder if we have almost headed in the right direction in that game as well. But yeah, how he's done that, I don't know. But and it reflects so badly on the previous two that they couldn't do that.
Yeah, it feels like there were a lot of silly errors before, like giving the ball away a lot. Individual mistakes like you're talking about, and Jones has just come in and completely stamped that out straight away, and that will do a lot to not conceding goals, conceding chances, won't it? Just the simple things of not giving away possession and not giving away the ball easily and giving up possession easily. Have you started to see that as well? Is that something you've started to notice as well? Just it just feels a lot more sort of safer from your side of things?
Yeah, to an extent. So funnily enough, actually, I mentioned Thierry Small there. So his debut was the game up at Bolton, and literally the first thing he did was roll the ball straight to one of their strikers. I can't remember which one. Don't think it was Charles. one of the other guys. No, because Charles was out. Yeah. So, yeah, but it was ridiculous. And Nathan, after that, he had a really good game. But Nathan sort of pointed out in his post-match interview, literally said, I wanted to punch him. I was going to punch him for giving the ball away like that, because obviously he just wants to cut out those sort of errors. And it, we do feel a lot safer. Like another real sort of good example of that, although he won't be playing Saturday because he's going to be serving the second of a two-game suspension, is Lloyd Jones. So yes, we signed him from Cambridge last season, as in the summer. And like I'd say he'd been our best defender this season. That doesn't mean he was immune to mistakes, and he certainly had made a few mistakes, particularly towards the end of Michael Appleton's reign. So there were two games in a row, Michael's last two, I think they were, or something around that, where he just kept backing off, standing off people on the edge of the box and allowing them to shoot. And Appleton pointed it out. And then he got dropped by Curtis Fleming, who was the caretaker in between Appleton and Jones at Blackpool, but then had to come on at halftime due to an injury and immediately gave the ball away. Like, just looked absolutely bereft of confidence. And he sort of saw him after, and I could see that he was really low and that sort of thing. And that hadn't been him this season. But Nathan's come in, Nathan signed him at Luton, actually, funnily enough. And he just looks absolutely back to his best. So again, if that's man management, if that's, you know, Nathan, I asked Nathan about it. He said he's just told Lloyd to go back to basics. Whatever he's done, like, he's just completely revitalized a player. So there's been two or three like good examples where you can pinpoint that is different to what was happening before. Because I remember there was quite a big discussion on the forum about have any players improved under Michael Appleton, and no one could really pick anyone. Whereas under Nathan, we've seen it, you know, as a team, but also individuals, you can pinpoint like a good number of them that have clearly started playing better than they were before.
Yeah, Lloyd Jones, is he suspended, isn't he, still on Saturday, Lloyd Jones?
He's
got the yellow card, didn't he?
Yeah, he picked up his 10th yellow, so he missed last night and will miss Saturday as well, which is a shame. But to be fair, like I did predict it before. I thought Terrell Thomas might go into the centre of the three. Not, it wouldn't be everyone's choice, but Nathan had played him there for maybe 20 minutes in a game recently, so I thought he might do it. And not only did he do that, he gave him the captain's armband. And Terrell, when we signed him, no one was massively excited. He came through our academy. We got rid of him last season. He was had his mistakes in him like they all did. This season is probably similar. But again, even he's looked quite good recently. So, yeah, he hopefully won't be as big a loss as he may have been even a couple of weeks ago.
Anyone else missing injury suspension? You mentioned Ramsey's missing. Anybody else big injuries coming into this one?
So Miles Leeburn is still out. He'll be out for effectively the whole season by the sounds of it. I mentioned Kane Ramsey, who looks like he's going to be out for the rest of the season. Off the top of my head, can't think of anyone else. I wasn't at Derby last night. Obviously, I watched on the stream, so I can't remember if there was any subs that might have been injury forced. But yeah, we're certainly a lot fitter than we were a few weeks ago. Michael Hector is probably the only other one who I'd say is a doubt, but at the same time, Nathan's saying he's fit now, so I think there's a chance he could come back in. So he may or may not be involved, but he hasn't played for probably 10 weeks now because he did get quite a long-term injury.
So I said earlier, Alfie May came off the bench on Tuesday night. Expecting to be rotated back in Saturday?
Potentially. So that's what he did against Portsmouth. He brought Alfie back in for Ladapo, and they've sort of been swapping over last couple of games. I don't know if he'll sort of look at the way Northampton defend. Are you big and physical at the back? I don't really know these things. And Nathan might have something he likes there. But so there's every chance he starts. Again, I thought Ladapo was poor last night. I didn't think he did very well. Whereas Alfie came in, but Alfie did come in when he came off the bench in a slightly different position. So, because Chooks came on at the same time, and Alfie came and played in the 10 just behind the front two of Chooks and EK and Dan Carney. So he may even think that. Although, again, like I think it was Anderson started in the 10 last night, if I remember rightly, and then ended up moving around and scoring. So there's a few different ways he could try that. And again, that is a difference between what he has at the moment and what Michael did for a little spell, is that he didn't have much opportunity to change things up, whereas Nathan clearly does. It's interesting. He mentioned something the other day about how if he was up to him, he'd love to have 14 players that he could play every game with and no one be injured. And, you know, he doesn't rotate for rotation's sake, but at the same time, it's worked quite well for him, so I wouldn't be shocked if he continues doing it to an extent.
Yeah, nice. You 3-5-2, is it likely whoever the players are, it's 3-5-2 for you?
Yeah. We haven't changed since Nathan's come in there. So apparently, I've been told that apparently he is known for being able to switch things up in game and stuff, but he's settled on the 3-5-2 so far. Which had, like, so when Michael brought it in, the problem we had was our wing backs. It didn't fit the system at all, and we were exploited down in the wide areas quite a lot. But a personnel change and whatever else Nathan has done seems to have worked with that, and so he's been quite happy with that formation.
Good stuff. So looking at the table then, you're 19th coming into the weekend. You've extended the lead on the bottom four to 5 points. There are a couple of teams with games in hand on you as well. But realistically now, I know I'm in the mindset of it, and as a lot of neutrals will be, that you've won a game, that's it. You know, a club like Charlton, there's no way you're getting involved in the relegation dogfight. As fans, are you still really on edge and really like, we are still in this relegation battle?
No, but like I say, that's how fickle we are, isn't it? Like one yeah. one win and we're like, right, we'll be fine. Like literally, I've seen two or three tweets talking about we're going to piss the league next season and all that because of how well Nathan's done so far. But, you know, people can't be getting carried away. And again, the manager said it himself, we're not in a false position. You know, we're 35 games into the season. We are where we are because we've been not good enough. So there is a minor concern that if things go horribly wrong again, but I can't see it because, like I say, it's only one win, but it's a massive shift in the direction of travel over four games now, really, or it's certainly three. So, look, I'll look very silly if we get relegated having said this, but I just can't see it being as bad as it had been, as long as we keep Chooks fit. You know, Chooks is our secret weapon off the bench. If he gets injured, then that does change things a little bit.
Yeah, we know him well from his time down at the Plastics, haunting us a few times, I'm sure. But I think I look at the relegation battle as well, as now you see Reading have got a couple of points taken off again. They're in deep trouble. But you look at the quality in the bottom four, and you look, I think at Cheltenham are probably the ones that you think might sneak enough points to get it. They seem to be ticking over and getting points now and again. The other three, I think, are pretty much gone based on quality, even if they've got games in hand. I think that they're a little bit all over the place. They are picking up points now and again. I know Carlisle won the other day. I do think there's still only probably one place left now, and you're more than likely to rise above it and move away from it than get anywhere near it again, considering the teams above you as well.
I think Port Vale, I think, look awful at the moment.
Mm.
Like I say, Cheltenham maybe. I've got my eye on Cambridge. I did a bit of number crunching the other day to see who's got the worst run in, and Cambridge have got the worst run in of all the sides. And obviously you throw into the mix that they've just lost their manager. They've lost three games in a row. They've lost, what was that, five of the last six. So I think they're on a bit of a downward spiral there. So I think they've got a chance of being dragged into it, even though they did have a bit of a points cushion. What they're down to now, so they're still quite high 16. Up. They're on 38. They've still got 5 points, but I could see them struggling over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and Burton as well. We played them last week, and they were terrible. Even though new manager is had a bit of a bounce, but they had an awful result on Tuesday night as well. So they're more likely to fall under you as well. Personally, I think you'd be absolutely fine. In terms of your expectations coming to Sixfields, is it all about getting 3 points now? As I saw a lot of comments over the last few weeks saying, like, get Bolton, Derby, Portsmouth, get it out of the way, and then our run can start. Is that basically what your expectations are now, is 3 points for the weekend?
Yeah, pretty much. That's just where we are now. After last night, people feel like invincible.
Yeah.
Particularly, obviously, after you guys, our next few games are all against sides. So I think we've got Cheltenham, Carlisle and Fleetwood maybe within our next three or four games. So not so much Northampton, but more so after. But obviously people are seeing Northampton as a much easier task than the one that we've just passed with flying colours. So, that's just the way it goes. And you packed out away end. Sides just got a great win away from home. people think we can come to your place and get a result.
Yeah, no reason why you shouldn't be thinking that either, I don't think, as well. Last question then, if you were John Brady in the Cobblers dressing room, what would you be saying to the Cobblers? How do we beat you on Saturday?
Well, it would have been easier to have this conversation about 3 weeks ago. but obviously, yeah, I'd still just make sure you get a comfortable lead before 20 minutes left, so Chuck's coming on can't make any difference. And like I say, I would have said target the defence, particularly target the wide areas, but we just seem to have tightened up a little bit on that regard. So considering from a set piece last night, that's we've not been great at set pieces this season, so maybe that's something that you guys can target. But again, even over the last few weeks, I feel like that's got slightly better before last night. So yeah, I can't give away as many secrets as I would have done a couple of weeks ago, where we were really vulnerable in certain areas. But Nathan just seems to have tweaked a few things that seem to be going in our favour.
Good stuff. Score prediction then? Correct score? Can draw you on some? Draw you on a
score prediction? I'll go 2-1 Charlton. So I'm still not out of the woods in terms of I don't like to predict clean sheets, because we have only kept one in 23 games. But yeah, I feel happy because we won our last game, so therefore we are guaranteed to win our next one.
Nice. I think I'll go for 1-1 at the weekend. I think we're ticking along. I think we are pretty much safe, I'd say. But yeah, you just want that last win just to seal it, get over the 50-point mark. But take a point on Saturday. I think it'll be a decent one no matter where position-wise we are in the league. So I'll go 1-1, I think. Yeah, Louis, thanks so much for joining us. Anything you want to plug before you go? Do you want to plug the podcast?
Yeah, well, yeah, if you guys want to check out Charlton Live, so we go live on Thursdays and Sundays. So if you check our YouTube channel, Charlton Live, or on all the usual podcast apps as well with the same show, you can hear us looking ahead to the game against Northampton. I think you're coming on as well, aren't you, Danny? So you can look ahead from your point of view as well. Yeah. Then we'll do the show again on Sunday to look back at the game. So yeah, if you just check us out, we're on Twitter and all that, Instagram, and yeah, come and join us.
Good stuff. You can watch them back as well if you can't catch it live, can't you, as well?
Yeah. They're all up there on catch up.
That's good stuff. Thanks a lot for coming on and sharing your Charlton views and thoughts and pain from the season. But hopefully for you guys, it's going to get a bit better. And next season, for sure, it does look like it's on the up. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, good luck to the Cobblers this weekend. NTFC Women as well. Good luck on getting the game on, finally. We're going to Sheffield again. We're going to try, I think, for the third time of asking to play that fixture up at Sheffield on Sunday. I think that's a 2:00 kickoff. So hopefully a good result coming from that one as well. And then don't forget to book your tickets in for the NTFC Women home game against Sporting Kowsa on March the 10th at Sixfields on Mother's Day, that is. So do get your tickets in for that one. We'll be back on Tuesday, as ever, with all of our reaction to these games. We'll see you then.
Sports Social Podcast Network.